All right, everybody, here we go again with another Tech Doctor podcast. I am Robert the Tech Doctor, and Allison Hartley, we're going to talk about Apple today. Are you surprised and shocked about that?
I am, you know, because we never talk about Apple on this podcast. Never.
It is a shocker, but that's what we plan to do. And unfortunately, you're missing a cable, I understand, so you're on your phone.
I am down a very essential USB cable that I need to hook my Sapphire audio interface into my lovely Mac. So I am coming to you live from Skype for iPhone. So sorry about the quality, but it does give me the opportunity to record the podcast while snuggling on the couch with a slightly sick puppy dog. So he's on the mend. But everybody just send good thoughts for little Gary anyway, because he's my boy.
Yes, Gary, we want you to get all well soon so you can... Yeah. Guide Miss Allison all around the world. That's what we want.
Trapes all over California. Exactly. Which is what I feel like we do most days.
All right. All over California.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what I wanted to spend a little time talking about today is what do we think the state of the art of things is with Apple at the moment? And, you know, let me just preface that by saying that for me, at least, I still... Whatever we say on this podcast, I'm still convinced that for me, the Apple products, hardware and software, is my preferred choice. And I think they're doing as well or better than anyone out there right now. But at the same time, I'm hearing different things. As you know, I read tons of Apple blogs and listen to Apple podcasts. I'm hearing different things from people about pros and cons of where Apple is at, how they're doing at this point. And, you know, it's some interesting speculations. And I think, as always, surrounding Apple, there are tons of rumors about this and that. And so I don't want to go down the road of saying that we're starting any rumors or participating in any rumors at this point, because Apple's doing great, honestly. I mean, in terms of their sales and their products and all that. But it is also true that since the iPhone became such a huge success starting in, 2007, you know, Apple has grown tremendously in the last 7 years. But they haven't really changed in some ways a lot of the mentality that they have. They still, you know, operate in with a fairly small number of engineers, and there a lot of people there have big responsibilities, especially now that they've gone to doing the updates of both OS X and iOS once a year. I mean, when you really think about it, updating an operating system once a year is a huge, huge venture, because you have to start many, many, many months in advance just getting the feature set in place, not to mention all the bugs and everything, and that have to be resolved and squelched and worked out. And this all has to be done, you know, very quickly to get the operating system out the door, to meet the deadlines of the iPhone launch, or to meet whatever deadlines they've set for OS X. So what we've seemed to be seeing, and certainly what I've seen, is the operating systems seem to be coming out with fair amount of bugs in them, and those bugs seem to be getting fixed for the most part fairly quickly with updates to the operating systems. But to me, that's not quite what we expect from Apple. At least Apple's reputation has been, we don't release it until it's really great, until it provides the user with a really great experience, and then we release it. But at the moment, at least, and I think it's mostly due to these growing pains that I mentioned, I don't think Apple's quite accomplishing that. And I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, I agree with you, and I can't pretend that it doesn't concern me. Like you, I still feel that in terms of hardware and software, the Apple ecosystem is still the one, for me, the one that I will still primarily dwell within. But I do agree that in years past, especially with iOS releases and also OS releases, Mac OS releases, we have been given a more polished experience right from the get-go. And I have some thoughts and ideas about why that's changing. I do think in some ways Apple is biting off more than they can chew in terms of the annual updates. I think that if they're going to really be successful in churning out these annual updates, they need to, first of all, bring on more people. And second of all, maybe try to be a little bit less revolutionary in terms of the millions and bunches of features they try to introduce. Of course, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but the many new features they try to introduce with each operating system, it seems like with their current staff as it stands right now, it's almost a little bit much, and you're seeing more software shipping with bugs.
So I think there are really a couple different things going on here. You know, I think we've all grown to really expect Apple to give us products that just work. I mean, that's what they say they do, and that's what mm-hmm. we want from them. At the same time, though, you know, a lot of these things are so built up. I mean, we get so excited about the new OS X operating system or the new iOS version, and we just have these huge expectations. But if we really think back on it, I mean, Apple did a few years ago release Snow Leopard after Leopard, and the whole purpose of Snow Leopard was to fix bugs and resolve problems that existed in Leopard. And really, in a lot of ways, you know, there were problems with Lion, and Mountain Lion resolved a lot of the problems that were issues in Lion. So iOS 7 was a huge change from iOS 6 with the interface completely redone, and and it took a few updates for iOS 7 to really get solid. So, you know, it's easy for us to think, wow, this is the worst problem we've ever had with iOS 8 or with problems with Yosemite and all that. But, you know, is it really? I mean, how new is this issue that, you know, updates have to be released pretty soon after the initial software release to fix things? How much of a problem really is it? And it's hard to figure that out.
Well, I think you're definitely right. I also feel like because Apple is so popular, so on top, so out there in the public, in terms of literally everybody almost has some sort of Apple product, that when these bugs or problems come to light, it is blown more out of proportion because of this mythological almost sense that Apple has of releasing software that just works and that is perfect and polished and everything. And I think I'm just as susceptible to that myth as anyone else. I know, especially in the blindness community, let's face it, we like to complain a little bit more than other people, especially because these devices have changed our lives in so many revolutionary ways. It's a little bit natural to get sort of nervous when something that we have come to rely on in many ways for many aspects of our independence, not that we weren't independent before, but just the ease of independence and doing certain things. I think it's natural to be a little bit nervous. I think that just in the general population, everybody is so reliant on their devices and smartphones that, yeah, when something little happens that makes it not work quite as well, it's natural to get a little bit nervous and to worry.
I think your point's well taken, and it could be a valid point that blind people are more anxious or more concerned about it, because it's not like we can just pick up a print copy of the book if we need to read something. We need our iOS device to be able to read something. But it's also true that, you know, that sighted people very heavily depend on their iOS technology.
Oh, yes.
So it's not just because we're sort of one of those, you know, corner niche markets that that is affected by it. Everyone is affected by it.
Exactly.
And I also would like to say that in my personal opinion at this point, I don't think Apple is any less committed to accessibility of their products than they've ever been. In fact, I think with Tim Cook, that they've certainly become more openly committed to accessibility in all kinds of ways.
I would agree. You know, the bugs that did happen in iOS 8, I had multiple incidences of people reporting on Twitter that when they wrote to accessibility at Apple.com, they were actually contacted by Apple accessibility engineers to resolve the problem. And I don't know, you know, outside of the developer program, because, you know, we correspond, you know, rather regularly when we file bugs as the betas are happening. But outside of the developer program, I don't know if I've ever heard this much of people from Apple directly reaching out and trying to replicate the problems that people are having with their devices. I just think it's incredible, really, that they have really reached out across what might sometimes seem like a divide between the company and the users, partially because of the veil of secrecy and partially because I think Apple's just so big. But I feel like they, as the accessibility team, have really reached out to try to individually address a lot of these issues with people. And I am heartened and hopeful, made very hopeful by that.
And they also responded very fast to
yes.
the bugs in iOS 8 and released updates very quickly to squelch a lot of the bugs. And it turned out that some of the bugs, which we thought initially were accessibility / voiceover bugs, were bugs for everyone. Like, for example,
yeah.
the keypad hanging on a number sometimes. We thought at first it only happened with voiceover running, but it happened for everyone.
Yep, yep. That was a huge, almost not a relief exactly, but...
Yeah, it was in a way kind of a relief because we knew since it was a mainstream bug that it would be addressed and fixed really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But another issue that I think complicates matters is a lot of these bugs are experienced by some people or in some situations and not experienced by other people in other situations.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it very difficult for Apple to track these things down, I would imagine, and to replicate them. For example, with me, my Yosemite Wi-Fi works absolutely 100% perfectly at home here with an Apple router.
Mm-hmm.
At work, however, I'm using a WPA2 Enterprise Wi-Fi connection, which is rather different from WPA2 standard. And Enterprise is what a lot of businesses and universities and all use. I have the issue that when probably 60, 70% of the time I open the lid on my MacBook Pro at work, Wi-Fi is not connected. And either it waits a few minutes before it connects or it doesn't connect at all. And I have to go in and toggle Wi-Fi off and back on. And when I toggle it back on, it's connected again for the remainder of the time that I use the computer until I close the lid. And then all bets are off when I open the lid, whether it will be connected again. Now, that never happens at home. So, you know, is it broken? Yes, it's broken at work, but it's not broken at home. So is something wrong with Apple's Wi-Fi software? Yeah, maybe. Or is there a problem with WPA2 Enterprise and the way that it connects to Apple products? Because I've also seen the same kind of thing sometimes happen with my iOS devices. And this was not limited to iOS 8. It was true in iOS 7 and maybe even iOS 6. Whose problem is it? It is really hard to define and figure out at this point. And how much does it mean? You know, yes, it is a hassle. It's frustrating when I open my machine and I have to go in and toggle the Wi-Fi on and off. How long does it take? maybe 20 seconds. Does that mean that, you know, Apple is failing and doomed and that I should abandon them and get me a nice, you know, Windows 8 machine that would have all kinds of other problems and issues mm-hmm. that I'd have to deal with? So where are we really here? You know, how much of this is our perception and our own quickness to be frustrated when something doesn't work quite right? And how much of it is real problems that need to be addressed? And I personally have a hard time sorting that out in my mind. I don't know how you feel about that.
I do too, because obviously when something affects me, I'm like, well, shoot, what's happening here? You know, but then I hear about a bunch of other things that are wrong with other people's devices and machines and everything that I don't seem to be affected by. It's like when it happens to you, then it kind of drives the point home a little bit more painfully almost.
Yeah.
You know,
it's personal.
Then it becomes personal. Yeah. So the same things happen with Microsoft and with Google. And the problem is that there are so many other devices out there and so many other iterations of these operating systems and hardware configurations that we just don't hear about it as much. I guarantee you there are as many, if not many more, problems with Windows desktop and mobile and Android. I mean, God, you know, still trying to use an Android device for me is just an exercise in frustration. It can be done, and it is by the strictest definitions of the term accessible, but there are still things that are just a pain for me there, and many, many bugs I'm sure that still exist for many users, both TalkBack and non. You got to put this into perspective, I think. Apple is a much more heavily scrutinized company. So these things are going to seem more life altering than they actually are in terms of the bugs.
Yeah, I think we need to keep that in mind and try to keep a perspective on this. You know, I sometimes think about, yes, there were some frustrations absolutely when iOS 8 first came out, and it was frustrating when mm-hmm. you'd try to dial a phone number and the keypad would hang, you'd have to restart the phone. Mm-hmm. At the same time, as I say all that, I didn't miss a single day or a single, as far as I know, text message or phone call or email or tweet or anything using iOS 8. As far as I know, it never caused me a problem other than some frustration. Mm-hmm. Now, I would rather not have frustration in my life with my technology, but it's not limited to the technology. I sometimes feel frustrated with my transportation situation or with mm-hmm. other people in my life, believe it or not, hard as that is to imagine, you know, and frustration with not being able to get the type of food that I really wanted for lunch, on and on and on. So how do we go about putting this in perspective? You know, it's a really hard question to answer, and I suppose it's one that each of us has to come to our own conclusions about, because you can read various blogs, listen to various podcasts, and some bloggers, podcasters are really frustrated by this. Some are, you know, well, it is frustrating, but, you know, things overall are pretty good. So I guess it's just very much individualized. But I believe this is the world that we live in now. It's not limited to our hardware and our software. It's just the way the world is. I personally would like to see Apple slow down. I'm sure they're going to listen to me, and I'm sure they're going to do exactly what I would like them to do. I'd like to see them slow down and be a bit less innovative next year and do a release of iOS and a release of OS X that really is devoted to bug fixing. You know, I would like to see that personally. But if they did that, they would get huge criticism from mm-hmm. a large part of the world about not being innovative enough.
Yep.
So
they can't win either way, you know?
They can't win either way. They're really caught in a bind. But I do, you know, admire their integrity when they do things like they did with Snow Leopard. And they say, look, this is not a feature-packed release. This is an under-the-hood resolving problems release. And mm-hmm. I don't think they caught a lot of blowback from that. I'm sure there were some people complaining about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that would be a really great stance for them to take. You know, we're going to resolve a lot of these inconsistencies. So I don't know if it'll happen, but we'll see, I guess.
It would be great if it could, but I understand because they're so publicly scrutinized and because they're so big, they might not have a choice in terms of keeping up with the competition, but to keep innovating. So I just hope that my hope is that if they're going to continue innovating, then they will bring on more of the brightest minds, because they already have really awesome people working there, but they need to bring on more staff who can handle the much more increased workload that goes along with innovating as they have attempted to continue doing.
And as they add features, the software gets more and more complicated.
Yep. So they need to really, really hire a lot of new people if they're going to continue to innovate and deliver products that just work.
I agree with you. And at the same time, I hear a pretty cogent argument that it's very hard to find these qualified people to hire that really can deliver at this level.
I sometimes wonder how true that really is. There are so many great people out there, great developers who really love Apple products, who really are down with Apple's mission. They love it. They support Apple. I feel that if Apple maybe gave people who on paper maybe were a little less qualified a fighting chance, they could come in and prove themselves.
It's so interesting because, you know, the whole computer science area, the whole area of software development especially, is so relatively new compared to other disciplines that a lot of people who do it may not have formal credentials or formal education in that area. And so right. It's really hard to know, I suppose, how to evaluate or hire the right people. And I know that Apple is very concerned about getting people who are real qualified to do what they want them to do. At the same time, you know, we are just so ignorant when it comes to really knowing what Apple goes through when they hire people and exactly how it works. Well, all we know is kind of what we hear from the outside, but it's definitely a problem. And I agree with you. I'd love to see them somehow find a way to hire more people to make this process hopefully smoother, more streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you've got the problem. The more people you hire, seems like it gets harder and harder for the left hand to know what the right hand is doing. And so any way you cut it, it's complicated.
Right. They would need to bring on more staff, like developers and engineers, but they would also have to bring on more management to make sure to be that connection between them and the top.
The other thing that I wanted to mention that I would like to see really change at Apple, which again is one of those itches that I can't scratch because it affects me totally personally, but I have been unable to get a 128 gig iPhone 6 Plus, even though I ordered it in September. I still don't have it. And I think that's a bad precedent for Apple to set, and who knows what happened? Who knows why it's been so difficult to supply enough of those phones? And I'm not the only person who doesn't have theirs. I hear from other people who are trying to get one, and it's especially mm-hmm. the 128 gigs that are the problem. I probably could fairly easily get a 64 gig if I was willing to do that. Maybe that's what I should do. Maybe that's what I should have done a long time ago. But I like having as much storage as I can get on my devices. I'm just enough of a geek that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that is a problem that I hope will get addressed somehow with the next iteration of the iPhone. It shouldn't be so hard to get one, I don't think.
I absolutely agree with you. Now, I'm lucky enough to have my 6 Plus, but this was the first time that I did not get an iPhone, the new iPhone, on launch day since Verizon got the iPhone back in 2011. Every single iPhone, I am one of those geeks who upgrades annually, and now the Verizon Edge program makes that a little bit easier. Every year I've gotten the new iPhone. I had to wait this time for my 6 Plus, and even last year with the 5S, I really, really wanted the gold 5S. Now, because I was still able to get the 64 gig version, which was at that time the most storage you could get, I settled for the space gray 5S. But our Verizon store, at the time we were living in Oakland, they only had 2 gold 5Ss, or I think maybe even, I'm not remembering correctly, I think perhaps there were stores in LA that maybe got a couple of gold 5Ss, but there were a bunch of stores in Northern California, including ours, that didn't even get them. I mean, that's ridiculous. The 6 Plus that I ended up getting had to be ordered. They sent our store in El Cerrito 8 6 Pluses, and the people who got them were the people who got there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and that was, they were basically gone before I even got there at 7:30, before the store opened at 8. I mean, it was ridiculous. The whole way that this is put together now, with just the lack of phones, the lack of supply to meet the demand for these products, it's going to hurt Apple in the end if they don't address it. And Tim Cook, as an operations person, he is a wonderful advocate and a wonderful face for the kinder, gentler Apple, but he needs to really delve more back into his supply chain background and do what he can as an operations guy to fix this, because it's going to get, you know, if it gets any worse, people will just give up. I know it. You know, people will give up and go to Android. I would never, you would never, but you know, there are many people who would, and I don't want to see that happen.
Oh, sure, because most people don't care all that much. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, it'd be nice to have an iPhone, but I'd be okay with a Galaxy, you know. Mm-hmm. We're not like that, but a lot of people are. And I think it's a problem that's going to have to be addressed. And we don't know what the ins and outs of it are. I've heard from some knowledgeable people that maybe something went wrong at the last minute in manufacturing, or something had to be changed at the last minute, and that really delayed Foxconn's ability to produce the 128 gig iPhone 6 Plus. Again, we don't know. We honestly don't know, because Apple doesn't mm-hmm. say what happened. And hopefully this is a one-time thing that will be corrected, but it's frustrating right now.
It is.
And yeah. It should not be that way on a device that Apple gets up on stage and says, this is the best iPhone ever, it's going to be on sale next week. You should be able to get one within a reasonable amount of time at that point. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not that I am feeling hopeless or really down about Apple these days, but I think it's only fair that as consumers, we voice both our praise and our concerns when they are, when they're there. And that's why I wanted to take a few minutes and do this podcast, because there are some real concerns and it seems reasonable to discuss them. At least that's how I feel about it.
I agree. You know, I love Apple. I consider myself to be in many ways an Apple fangirl, an Apple apologist, whatever you want to call it. But I have to call things as I see them. And I feel that moving forward, Apple needs to understand that as popular as they are, as great of a user experience as they provide, they are one company among many. And they need to act like it a little bit more, by especially the supply chain issue. The software bugs and everything, I can almost understand, because it's impossible sometimes to plan for a lot of those. I apologize. My dog just heaved a big snoring sigh. I hope that didn't come through on the recording. But the software issues, I understand, are a little bit more difficult to tackle. But this issue of the supply chain is my greatest area of concern at this point. and it needs to change going forward.
Yeah, I agree. So I really wanted us to have a chance to talk about these things. Maybe it helps our listeners a little bit to at least hear this perspective. And I know people are going to be making lots of decisions over the holidays about products and buying things for people and all that. And so I think maybe this is just kind of a reality of where things are. If you want a 6+, it may be a bit difficult to get one, especially if you want the 128 gig. If you can mm-hmm. go for the 64, probably have an easier time finding one. Because I've even been checking the Apple stores around my area, and they do offer this nice plan where you can actually order a phone online and then pick it up in the store the same day. And most of the stores in my area haven't had any or very few. There may be a day or two where I'll see a store has 128 gig 6+, but they don't stay long, and then they're gone again. They don't have them again for quite a while. So it's just a frustrating thing, and it's something to be aware of as you think about what you're going to buy over the holidays. I still am in agreement with you, though, that if you decide, well, I'm going to, especially if there's accessibility involved, if you decide, well, I'm going to go with an Android product because they're available, beware that, you know, there are also issues to deal with when it comes with it to accessibility on Android, and make sure you know what you're getting into. That's all I would say about that.
And in my opinion, issues with just a subpar user interface, accessibility aside, I would say don't do yourself that big a disservice. You're going to regret it.
Well, I agree with you. I feel the same way about it, honestly. Yeah. I would agree with that. Although, you know, in all fairness, I think it's like everything. It's like we were just saying about how frustrated people feel or don't feel about the current Apple situation. Some people are more tolerant of the Android interface than others.
True. Yeah.
And so it depends on what you need to do with it, what you want it for, how tolerant you are, and all that. Mm-hmm. But eyes wide open is the way to go about this.
Yes.
Because the worst thing I could think of is people buying something and then ultimately feeling really disappointed in it.
Mm-hmm. Generally, if you know that you want an Android, then go with an Android. If you're just settling for it because you can't get the iPhone that you want right now, wait for the iPhone that you want. That's, I guess, what I was trying to say before.
Yeah, it's a good point. I would agree. Well, I want to just briefly talk about one last topic that I'm kind of struggling with, and I'm just really curious to get your opinion about. And I've really been thinking a lot about what am I going to give myself for Christmas, because weird as it is in my family, for the most part, we decide on our own Christmas gifts because we know what we want more than other people know what we want.
The same thing.
And so, yes, admittedly, it's maybe kind of odd, but it's kind of what we do. Mm-hmm. So I've been really intrigued by and toying with the idea and of buying myself one of the new Victor Reader streams.
Really?
And the reason
to hear this.
Yeah, and the reason I've been thinking about it is because I'm really I think they've done a really great job with the interface for the stream and the way they've used Wi-Fi connectivity to connect with Bookshare and NFB Newsline, and I believe they're also connecting now with NLS in their latest update. Mm-hmm. And they've got a really great podcasting interface. But my dilemma is this. I have all those things in a way that I'm very happy with on iOS. So what do I need a specialized device for when iOS for me is really meeting my needs? And the truth that I've come down to is I really don't need one. Mm-hmm. Does the geek in me want it to be able to play with it and see how well it works and decide for myself, you know, what do I like and not like about it, and maybe would want a podcast about it, and maybe it would be a fun thing to delve into, and but does that really justify, you know, the purchase of said device. You know, and I think it's a struggle that we need to all begin to think about, you know, because we all have limits on how many $300, $400 devices we can buy. And so it seems like we need to make wise decisions when it comes to that. But it's an interesting dilemma. And I'm curious what your thoughts are about it.
You know, it's like you were reading my mind, because I was actually talking with Jeremy about this last night, because I've heard so many people giving praise for the new Victor Reader Stream. And I was talking about, you know, well, I have all this on my iPhone. It's great. I only have to keep track of one device. It's wonderful. And Jeremy's like, but yeah, well, what about when you're reading a book and a tweet comes in and it completely interrupts your book, the flow of your book? If you had something like a Victor Reader Stream, you wouldn't have to deal with that. And I'm like, well, that's true. And again, for me, it's the geek in me kind of wants to see this new interface and how it works and how it differs and how it may be better or worse. I mean, there are some things right now about the current version of the Bard app for iPhone that drive me absolutely nuts, that make it almost annoying sometimes to use Bard on the iPhone. So that makes me wonder sometimes, well, gee, if I just got a Victor Reader Stream, then I would have a nice, clean interface to Bard. I wouldn't have to worry about whether or not the two-finger double tap for play and pause would work, because I could just push a button. I wouldn't have to worry about browsing if the table index would actually let me do what it's supposed to do in my wish list, because I could just browse on the cool interface that they've developed for the stream. So, I mean, I'm actually kind of struggling with this myself, too. As much as I like having one device that does everything, I can see incidences in which it would be nice to have a second device. For example, I'm a big fan of the Mosin Explosion. I could see myself listening to that on my Victor and tweeting and interacting with Jonathan and my fellow listeners on my iPhone. That would be a much nicer experience. There are just a lot of more instances now that I'm coming to in my life where I'm like, maybe it would almost be easier to have another device here for this. Having to use public transit a lot in my commute, I get nervous when I have to have my iPhone out to do things like scroll through podcasts and look for this book or that book or anything, just because some of the places that I need to kind of wait are not necessarily in the nicest areas. So I do worry that somebody might try to snatch my iPhone. Not that they wouldn't necessarily try to snatch a Victor Reader Stream, but it's not an iPhone. You know, yeah, what I mean?
iPhones are targeted, you know, people grab them if they can sometimes.
Right. And I like to think that I am extremely aware of my surroundings and pretty good about knowing when people are approaching me and everything. But at the end of the day, especially, I'm tired. I've got my dog. I've got all my stuff. Sometimes I've got multiple bags I'm trying to deal with. And quite frankly, it would be frighteningly easy for someone to probably overpower me enough to take my iPhone, even with me being aware of what's happening around me. I mean, it could happen to anybody, you know?
Yeah. Your points are good ones. And the other issue too, of course, is that, you know, it's nice to have, even though you are a lucky woman with an iPhone 6 Plus, has great battery life. Sometimes it's nice to have another device that is not sucking down your iPhone battery. So,
absolutely. You know, yeah, you can, I've thought of that too.
You can offload your reading onto something else. For me, though, it gets even a bit more complicated, because I have an iPad. And so if I want to listen to the Mosin Explosion on my iPad, I can still be tweeting on my iPhone, because, mm-hmm. you know, the iPad has largely met the need for that second device. And so it's even harder to decide, do I want to invest in a specialized device? And I you know, I've talked to some people that have the Victor Stream, and I've seen it demonstrated. I've never had one of the current versions, so I don't really mm-hmm. know firsthand, but from what I've seen, it looks like it's a very nice interface for a radio listening, for podcast listening, for accessing and reading books. It is a bit frustrating to me that you can't add more voices to the Victor Reader Stream for text-to-speech reading. I'd like to, for example, I'd really like to see the James voice on on the stream, because that's the voice that I prefer on iOS when we use Voice Stream Reader. I think James is, to me, it's about the best synthetic voice I've ever heard for reading books. Other people may have different opinions, and that's how it works. But you know, there are limitations. It's frustrating to me that you can't directly access the Audible store on on the stream. And if you are using a Mac, you have really only one option for getting your Audible books onto the stream. As far as I know it, you have to pretty much copy them onto the SD card, which means downloading them on your Mac and then copying them over to the stream, which, you know, to me seems so retro. It seems like what we did such a long time ago as compared to just being able to download them from our library the way we do on iOS. And so it seems like there's some significant pros and cons to this whole, do I really want to spend my money on a specialized device? And I'm having a hard time making that decision.
One could also make the argument, though, that as podcasters, and let's face it, not to be too conceited, but as, you know, figures in the blind community to whom people turn for advice on different products and software, and thank you all, by the way, we wouldn't be here without you. We love you. Couldn't it be argued that we have a responsibility to use as many products as we can and to get a really solid perspective of what the good and bad is of each of these products so that we can tell the listeners? Maybe I just want to go shopping, but
I'm right there with you with that rationalization. I think we do have that responsibility, but we also have the reality of limited finances and needing to make the best financial decisions that we can.
True enough. To that end, I really wanted to get a new MacBook Pro. But what I did instead was took the MacBook Pro that Jeremy was not using, because it is a newer model that can support handoff and everything, and I just invested in putting an SSD and a 16 gigs of RAM in it, because I knew that that was going to be a better financial decision than spending $3,000 right now on a new MacBook Pro. So I get it.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly gotten more complicated with the advancement of these mainstream technologies being the way that they are. And it's really getting interesting with the whole debate between specialized and mainstream. And I'm not sure right now whether or not I will decide to buy a Victor, you know, a stream, because I'd also like maybe to use that $350 later on this year toward taking a look at an Apple Watch. So there are lots of potential ways that this money could be spent, and I'm finding it harder and harder to make the decision. You know, my fear, honestly, is that I would get a Victor stream, and I would really enjoy learning about it and really enjoy the interface, but that it would be a bit like some of the other devices I've gotten, like the Nexus 7 that I bought, for example. Mm-hmm. Once I had finished learning about it and podcasting about it and kind of dealing with it and gotten to know it well, it slides in the drawer and it almost never comes out again.
Right. The tech honeymoon would be over.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The tech honeymoon would be over, and then would it have really been worth it?
Yeah, that is something with which I'm struggling too, because I'm not ultimately sure what I'm going to do either. NLS, for God's sake, please fix the Bard app. I beg you. If you could just do that, I would never have to question whether or not I need a Victor Reader stream, honestly. Fix the Bard app.
Well, without saying more than I'm able to at this point, that's the other thing that needs to be thought about, is there will be updates to these apps, including the Bard app. And because they are made in software, you can count on, mm-hmm. you can't count on when, but you can count on eventually a lot of these problems will be resolved and you won't have to buy another device at that point. To some extent, that's true for the stream. They're doing a huge amount of things in software right now.
In very short amounts of time. Yeah.
But, you know, how long will that hardware be viable, and how far can they go mm-hmm. with it versus, you know, we're going to likely, in all likelihood, be changing our iOS devices probably once a year, or certainly mm-hmm. for most of us, once every couple of years. And so we're going to be keeping up with the latest hardware, and we can do it at a reasonable cost, at least a more reasonable cost than buying a new Victor Reader Stream every year or two. And so I just think it's an incredibly interesting, challenging landscape that we live in right now. And there's so much about it to think about, honestly. I mean, it's complicated.
There really is.
So I don't know where all this will go. I just wanted to throw it out as a topic for discussion. And I appreciate you jumping in there because I forgot to tell you ahead of time we were going to talk about it.
Hey, but no, that's okay. I was ready.
You were ready. And just the fact that you were ready, I think, kind of means that it's something that we're thinking about.
Mm-hmm. A lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and there may be other products. I'm not trying just to pick on the stream, but it's the one that's on my mind right now.
Right. Mine too.
And it seems to be the one that is really taking more advantage of a lot of this newer type technology with all the ability to connect with the different libraries for the blind and do all this mm-hmm. Wi-Fi updating and connectivity that the iOS devices do. They're really doing a good job, I think, of pushing that forward.
Yes, it's I agree.
Just leaves us with hard decisions to make.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've pretty well covered it for this time on the Tech Doctor podcast. Any final comments or thoughts you want to throw out there?
Nothing I can think of right now. If we don't talk to you guys before the holidays hit, happy holidays. If you do want to get a hold of us, you can always send an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, let us hear what you think about these topics we've raised here. These burning questions. And Allison, you have a good holiday yourself. And
oh, you too.
Well, thanks. And for now, this is Robert the Tech Doctor. I'll say see you next time.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.